Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Deck Hogan, and he'll be answering your most important questions on steelhead on the fly. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Deck a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return at your convenience to the website at any time and just listen to the broadcast then. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this show cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Deck Hogan about steelhead on the fly. Get ready to visit the International Sportsman's Exposition nearest you in Phoenix, March 7th through 9th, in Salt Lake City, March 13th through 16th. Each ISE show spotlights 400 to 600-plus exhibitors, including fly shops and hundreds of lodges, guides, and outfitters from across the West, Canada, Alaska, and even South America. Watch ISE's Best of the West Distance Casting Contest. Learn from the best local fly tires at our How-To Center and Fly Tying Video Theater. Meet fly fishing legends and next-generation stars at ISE's Fishing Theater, including Clouser, Dennis, Rickards, Blanton, O'Keefe, Gunn, Patin, Dorsey, and dozens more. Watch film premieres of Soulfish by Mikey Weir and Equilibrium by Dr. Grant Wiswell. Schedules and info online right now at sportsexpos.com. That's sportsexpos.com. Before we introduce Deck, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and also a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet, go to our homepage, and just below Deck's section there, you'll find a link that says click here to register for our drawing. Just click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Deck's book, A Passion for Steelhead, Compliments of Deck and Wild River Press. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we've talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on the homepage. It's the same text box we use for you to submit questions during the show. So listen closely during the show, stick with us, and at the end of the show, we'll ask the question, and the first person that provides the correct answer will be our winner. Our guest tonight is Deck Hogan. If you've ever met Deck, you'll know that his love and passion for steelhead fly fishing, much more. He is equally a master of teaching all of the facets. An accomplished writer and exquisite photographer, Hogan has penned numerous articles for many of America's leading fly fishing publications and is the author of the highly acclaimed must-have book, Passion for Steelhead by Wild River Press. Deck was a full-time steelhead guide from 1989 to 2003, guiding fly anglers on the beautiful waters of the Skagit, Sauk, Guyomish, Grande Ronde, and Deschutes Rivers. And you'll have to correct my pronunciation later on that, Deck. He is a pioneer of the two-handed casting in North America and continues to be a constant part of his aura. Deck is a master of all facets of the sport, including two-handed casting, reading water, presenting flies, fly tying, and highly sought-after spay casting instructor. As if one dream job weren't enough, Deck's had two. Deck is retired from guiding now and is a full-time firefighter and EMT. His schedule at the fire department allows him time to stay active in his fly fishing career, so expect to see plenty of Deck in the coming years doing seminars and teaching fishing techniques and casting. In fact, he's just released a 4-hour steelhead fly tying DVD entitled Steelhead Flies Tying Classics. Deck, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hey, thanks a lot. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Good, good. Good to have you. Well, we've got a ton of questions for you tonight. I hope you're ready.
I'm ready. Bring it on.
Okay.
If you want, just for respect to the rivers and certainly hard to pronounce some of those words.
Oh, yeah.
Skagit and Skykomish.
Okay.
Grand Ron Rivers, yeah.
Okay, there we go. See, I knew that correction would be coming. Well, and those, that was the primary place that you guided, it says.
Yep.
In your bio, during the years. And those rivers are located where?
Well, the,
states?
I lived pretty much on the Skagit River, which was is in Washington, northern Washington, and empties into the Puget Sound. South of that is the Skykomish and Stillaguamish Rivers, which dump into the Puget Sound as well, coming out of the Cascade Mountains. And the Deschutes River is in Oregon, east of the Cascade Mountains, where I spent a lot of time guiding. And then the Grand Ron flows into the Snake River through Oregon and Washington and into the Snake.
Okay.
So, Pacific Northwest boy.
Okay, good. Well, tonight we're going to, and I did see some questions about other parts of the world in here, so
sure.
Hopefully you can fill us in on that. But we're going to try to talk about Steelhead itself, and a lot of questions in here about equipment, and they seem to be all over the board, so we're going to have to dig deep on that equipment because everybody's concerned about that. Flies, of course, and presentation strategies, techniques, expectations on the river, you know, what people expect when they go out fishing. So that's a few of the things we're going to cover. It's going to take us a full hour and a half, I'm sure. So let's get going. First of all, Deck, what is a steelhead?
What is a steelhead? Besides the fastest, meanest, most fun fish to catch in fresh water, it is a that is genetically predisposed to go to sea. So it's a rainbow trout that goes to sea like a salmon does. The only difference is, so they'll live in the river as a juvenile, and then they go out to the ocean. They live in the ocean from 1 to 3 years, and that's where they do their growing, and then they return to the fresh water to spawn like a salmon. The big difference is that unlike a salmon, a steelhead is capable of spawning again. Rainbow trout.
So when you say genetically set to go to sea, so it's not a rainbow trout that just decides to go to sea. It's,
correct.
Every steelhead that's born will go to sea, and it's not a decision-making process on their end, right?
Right. And, you know, over the years I've heard various theories, but I don't believe that if a rainbow trout is born and he's a landlocked true rainbow trout, why he's just going to up and decide to go to sea one day. It's genetics that dictate that.
Have there been any studies on why they think that took place in the first place?
Well, I'm sure that there has been plenty of studies, and the little bit that I can tell you, and it kind of makes sense to me for the most part, of course, nature does some amazing things as she wishes that we don't have answers to, but it seems to me that rivers that are not very fertile, like the tumbling Cascade rivers, you know, that come out of the Cascade Mountains that are glacially fed, and although we see some caddis larvae and some stonefly larvae in them, they're not really that rich in aquatic life. So the trout need a place to grow and feed. So they head out to sea. And anybody who's fished a lot of the rivers or little creeks in the Cascades know that where there is really no steelhead passage to the ocean, you're catching, you know, a big trout is 6-7 inches. We try and stretch them to a foot long, but they're really little guys because they just don't have that much to eat. So where they can get to the ocean, they'll go and feed there. And then if you look to some rivers that are very prolific with aquatic life, while there might be some crossover, some resident trout and also some steelhead, but when you get into the really, really rich aquatic life rivers, you don't typically see steelhead. The Deschutes River, I know people are listening right now and say, no, the Deschutes has great trout and great steelhead, and it's certainly very, very rich in aquatic life. The difference there is it's kind of a man-made situation as regards to the trout. For as much as we don't like to hear that, it's got dams on it, and it's kind of a tailwater fishery. So you can enjoy the best of both worlds there. There's my lengthy answer.
Okay. Now, do steelhead, are they sensitive to the water conditions? You had just mentioned they do better in river that doesn't have a lot of aquatic life. But are there any water conditions they're particularly sensitive to?
Certainly, like most of God's creatures, needs it to be clean and unpolluted. But I think what we're getting at is it does need to be, you know, cold water.
Cold water, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a feeling that at some point in this program we'll talk about water temperatures and how steelhead react. But typically,
okay,
I'll just throw this out right now, rivers that run in the 40s and the 50s is where steelhead like to inhabit. Anything warmer than that, it's just not good for them.
Okay. Dave in Towanda, Pennsylvania, wanted to know about, does steelhead make a red, and what's the structure like of the red?
Oh, that's a good question. Steelhead certainly make reds. Why they're called reds, I don't know. That's a question,
yeah,
I've always wanted to look up in my life and never have. In any event, their spawning bed or their red is kicked out by their tails. That big, massive tail, of strong tail of theirs, just moves gravel and keeps cleaning it until it just exposes the right size rock. And in my experience, seeing plenty of reds, that the rock they like to use is about, oh, golf ball size to tennis ball size, maybe a little bigger than that, and maybe a little smaller than on the other end, but that's about the right size. And I generally see them in the tailouts toward the bottom part of the run where it's, oh, 1 to 3 feet deep, and usually fairly close to shore. If they're not close to shore, they're usually deep in the tail out and out a little further. And I think it just all has to do with the right amount of speed water has and the tail outs provide.
Lots of oxygen,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, oxygen and all of the above. Another thing I've noticed about a placement of a red is it's usually not too far from some deep water refuge, in that, you know, just if you have a really long, long, thin tail out, you probably won't see too many reds in there.
Right.
If you have a shorter tail out where they can get right into the safety of the deeper pool, why, that seems to fit.
Okay. You had mentioned that the juveniles stay in the river for a few years. About what size are they when they go out, and what size are they when they come back?
Okay. That's another thing that's going to vary throughout their range. Typically, a steelhead that's par stage, or it's smolt stage, when they're a smolt is when they're traveling out to sea, and they're typically 8 to 10 inches. They can be one year old, they can be 2 years, and in some cases they can even be three. In most of the Pacific Northwest, I'd say that I'm sure there's some biologists that can correct me, but I think I'm reasonably accurate with this, that they go out to sea most of the Northwest rivers when they're about one. They've been in the river for 1 year, and they'll go out to one or two. It's probably 50-50. Obviously, the bigger the juvenile is, whether he's 2 years or 1 year old, the more of an efficient eating machine he is. A larger juvenile is going to hit the salt water and be able to eat larger prey, thus growing faster, more efficiently. So it varies, and that, let's just say, a steelhead that's gone out and after 1 year in the salt and the fresh water, he may live in the salt water for 1 or 2 years. Obviously, when he comes back, if he's two years in the ocean, he's going to be bigger than a 1 year. And we call those one salt fish and two salt fish. Typically, a one salt fish is going to be your 4 to 6 pound, maybe 7 pound fish. And then the two salts are your larger, you know, 8 into 10, 11, 12 pounds. And then it goes from there. And as you go up and down the West Coast and the steelhead's range, there's going to be some rivers, the farther north we get into British Columbia, we'll have fish that live in the freshwater for 2 years and go out for 3 years, and they come back really big. So it varies, and I think that's nature's way of just protecting against disasters in the ocean, or, you know, natural disasters in the ocean, or natural disasters in the river. So there's always some stock left behind.
Yeah, we talked about that with the Atlantic salmon, in that they aren't consistent, and
right,
that was attributed to the same reason of protection, self-protection.
Certainly, and with the steelhead and Atlantic salmon have very similar life histories.
Okay, now they go out to sea, they come back, they spawn, then they go back out to sea again.
They're capable of going back out. They don't always make it. The rigors of spawning usually claims most of the male fish, or bucks as we like to call them. They'll hit the river early and ready to spawn, and They'll stay around through the, you know, the whole spawning process with all the female steelhead, and they fight, and they tend to wear themselves out. So when studies have been done, scale samples have been taken of females, it seems that females are the ones that are successful at repeat spawning. And while we're on the subject of that, and they certainly die from the rigors as well. And then certainly, farther up the river systems you go, like the, you know, tributaries of the Columbia, it's just a long journey back through a lot of dams, and they don't, very few actually make that journey. But while we're on that subject, when I've heard people on the river catch a big steelhead or see someone catch one and say, yeah, that one must be a repeat spawner. You know, while that, I like the romance of that, the truth of the matter is when a steelhead spawns and successfully gets back into the ocean, they typically only stay for 1 year before they come back. And when they spend that year in the salt water, they're basically just mending themselves from the previous spawning run. So they don't get much bigger on that second run. It's their initial sea term where they do most of their growing.
We have a couple of questions here. One that came in from Bob Todd over the internet while we've been talking, and then another one from Dave again in Pennsylvania. Talking about East Coast versus West Coast steelhead, is there a difference genetically between the steelhead that come out of the Great Lakes, and or are they the same kind of fish? Are there any differences between those?
Genetically, they're the same fish because steelhead are native to the Pacific Ocean. So all of the stocks of steelhead, even the very first steelhead that were introduced into the Great Lakes, come from the Pacific Ocean, and namely the Pacific Northwest. So genetically, they're the same. They don't have an ocean to go to. They just use the lake instead. Over time, that may have evolved them into some subtle differences in their behavior that I'm not aware of. They don't have to go through the acclimation process from salt to fresh and fresh to salt. But to answer that question, they're all from the Pacific Northwest.
So all the ones in the Great Lakes were stocked at one point in time?
Correct.
From the Pacific?
Yep.
Okay.
Some have become naturalized in the Great Lakes.
Sure. Sure, but because of the spawning and so forth. They're natural now, but at one point they had to be put there. Yeah. And you
natural,
said
natural, but not native.
Right. Now, there are no steelhead in the Atlantic?
Steelhead are Pacific Ocean
fish. Okay.
And if there are any steelhead in the Atlantic, it's somebody's little project to see if they can plant them there.
Okay, so then where else would you fish for steelhead other than the northwest there, some, you know, Alaskan Panhandle?
You know, obviously the Great Lakes offers some wonderful opportunity, as everybody knows. Sticking to the Pacific Ocean, you've got from Northern California all the way up to Alaska, and then the next frontier is over in Kamchatka and Russia.
Right,
On the other side of the Pacific Ocean.
And then if you get further south there, further south, then the water gets too warm, I take it.
Correct.
And we're out of the area. Yeah.
Yep, they're basically a northern Pacific animal, north of the equator. There was, historically, they ran as far as Southern California and even into the parts of northern Baja California.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty amazing fish. And I'm sure that they had some genetic adaptations to survive that warmer water. And, of course, things have changed over time, and urbanization has changed some of the watersheds. And I'm sure that it's raised water temps a few degrees in various parts of their range as well, which probably didn't suit them very well.
Right. Can you say what do you think the best steelhead fishery is right now in the world?
Well,
and you can offend anyone you want, but
best.
Somebody's going to get offended, but
yeah. No matter what we say, I've been a good boy to this point, but no, I love it all, and I, if people are passionate about fishing, well, that's what's most important. As far as best goes, I've been asked that question a lot over the years, and my quick answer is, you have to first define to me what best is. Is best, catching as many fish as you can? Is best the quality experience that appeals to you, whether it be high desert river and floating line and surface flies, or big snow-capped mountains and glacial-fed streams with big wild winter fish? I'm sure that all of the above fits into everyone's agenda at some point, certainly mine. If you had to ask me, you know, what would be the last place that I'd fish if I only had a week, I'd probably, this is a tough one for me for sentimental reasons, it'd be
right
between the Dean River in July, down near Tidewater, that's in British Columbia, and it would be on my home water of the Skagit, and certainly for sentimental reasons. But that sentiment founded on really awesome experiences and some incredible fish and beautiful water. I know that some of the guys that head up the Russian programs would tell you that's the best last place to fish.
Right, right.
But that's a whole different thing. There's no mountains. It's tundra rivers. There's not much structure in the water. So
right,
although I'm attracted to the fact that they're purely wild steelhead, I'm not too excited about the conditions that you would fish under.
Right, right.
So,
well,
I don't know if that answers the question, but
yeah, it, and like you say, it depends on, you know, number of fish and so forth. I don't think you get the numbers in Oregon and Washington like you once did, but you go to Kamchatka and you're out in the wilderness, there's going to be more fish. So
the possibility is there,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah. We need to take a little break here, Deck, and we'll be right back when we return. We'll be talking more with Deck about fly fishing tactics for steelhead. We'll be jumping into equipment here because there's a lot of questions about equipment. Our approach is simple. Education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to a fly fishing magazine. It is one of the only magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like shortline nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's www.flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Deck Hogan about steelhead on the fly. If you'd like to ask Deck a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Deck, before we jump into those equipment questions here, I wanted to find out, you're working as a EMT now and a firefighter, but you're still involved heavily in the fly fishing business. Tell us what you've been up to lately in the fly fishing business.
For personal reasons, I had a change in venues, changing careers, and I know that it kind of shocked a lot of people that I hung my guiding hat up. I did it for 15 full-time years and just needed to move on to some other things, one of which is I always wanted to be a firefighter as well, and I thought, well, here's my opportunity before it's too late. So I delved into that whole process, which is quite a process, and I feel really fortunate to have gotten a job as a full-time firefighter in a nice little city in Utah. The competition for that job is just incredible. So in any event, my goal was to get that job and still be involved in fishing. You know, worked a lot of hard years and put my time in the fishing world, and I certainly didn't want to walk away from it. As some of your listeners may know, I've been writing magazine articles since the early 1990s, and teaching classes and clinics and casting and working with different manufacturers on products, and I'm still able to do that. It seems like now that I'm not guiding, and I work 2 days at the fire station and have 4 days off, and that just rotates throughout the year, I've got 4 great days to devote to writing and lecturing and traveling around the country and teaching classes and filming DVDs, and I'm working with Tim Rajeff of Echo, Rajeff Sports, Echo Rods, and we've just completed a series of two-handed rods. They're called DH for Deck Hogan. Proud to say, he just let me have full reign over the actions and cosmetics, and they're just about done, and they should be available in April. And we've got two-handed rods we have 6 models from 4-weight to 9-weight in various lengths. I also have been very involved in working with Airflow, designing lines for them for quite a few years now. The Delta Spey line is something that I'm partially responsible for, and a few other things. And then I just completed this fly tying DVD with my brother-in-law, Marty Howard, who's an excellent instructor in fly tire as well. We, unbeknownst to us as we're filming this thing, we didn't realize we were actually filling a void. there is no Northwest Steelhead Tying DVD available, really. Alec Jackson does a nice one, but it's pretty much specific to one pattern, his spade style, where Marty and I cover 14 flies, 14 different patterns that show just a pretty intense variety and array of techniques that can teach you how to tie a billion different fly patterns. We do hackle tip wings and bronze mallard wings and strip wings and spay flies and low water flies, and it's a lot of fun. So I've been very involved in that and still writing. Wrote a passion for steelhead, most of it at the fire station. So we have a little downtime
and
there.
We do have a link on your speakers page on our site to, is it martyhoward.com, as I remember?
Yeah, martyhoward.com. You can purchase the DVD, which we're in the process of printing them out right now, so they'll be ready to go.
Good. Okay, well, great. Sounds like you're still very involved in fly fishing, and
mm-hmm.
That's good. We don't want to lose
you. Here I am talking to you.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Well, one of the questions I want to address before equipment here is from Joel Kane in Ohio, and of course, you know, not everybody has a chance to grow up or work in the Northwest and be that close to steelhead, so a lot of us have to go out there and give it a try. He says he lives in Ohio and he's dying to get into steelhead fishing. What resources can you recommend, and what direction would you point him in? Would you suggest wherever he goes, whether it's the Great Lakes or the Northwest, to go to a guide, or is this something he can read your book on and go do it himself? What would be your suggestion?
Reading the book would be a good start. You know, all the information's in there. That certainly can't tell you exactly how to hold your hand and show you exactly how it's done. So as far as resources go, yeah, there's books and videos, and there's a lot of really good information out there. But if you have limited time and you want to go have a Northwest fly fishing experience with a viable shot at hooking a steelhead, I would, you know, I'm certainly biased, but it's the smart thing to do, and that's to hire a guide. If not, you know, for a day or two to see what it's all about, or just if you've got 4 days to go out there, I would just hire the guide for 4 days and go enjoy yourself and let the guide do most of the thinking for you. And you do all the fishing, and it's an incredible learning experience. I don't know any good steelhead fly fishing guides who aren't just really eager to not only show you the water, but to really share their passion and technique and philosophy. And so I'd always vote for hiring a guide.
Okay. And another, this is kind of a random question, but I'll throw it in here right now, that came in over the Internet was Earl in St. Louis. He says he's seeing steelhead for sale in his local fish stores right now. The merchants are telling me that they are fresh. Where could these fish be coming from in the middle of winter here in the Midwest?
That's good, and that could get a whole bunch of hackles riled up. I can tell you right now that I highly doubt they're actual wild steelhead from the Pacific Northwest. They're probably pen-raised, those triploid rainbows, and they can pretty much call them whatever they want. I know a little bit more about this than I'm letting on, but let's just, I can assure you those weren't caught, you know, in
wild
on the Olympic Peninsula and shipped over there. No.
Yeah.
No, it's just, it's a misnomer for the most part. It could be anything, and yeah, don't worry about it.
All right. Okay, equipment. Dave in Towanda, Pennsylvania again. Dave asked a lot of questions tonight. Thanks, Dave, for all your good questions.
Thanks, Dave.
We appreciate them. Can you catch a steelhead on a 5-weight rod, or do you need a bigger rod than that?
Well, kind of, most of the river kind of use fish, it'd be like trying to shoot a moose with a .22.
Okay, there you go.
I wouldn't recommend it. You know, I'm always the first guy, too, to say, hey, you know, take what equipment you have. Don't let that keep you off the steelhead rivers. Just, you know, go for it. But at the same time, particularly where wild steelhead are concerned, we have a responsibility of landing them quickly. And I've met plenty of steelhead in my day that no matter how great a fish fighting skills you have, a 5-weight just doesn't cut it. In Northern California, where there's runs of half-pounders, they call them, they're precocious steelhead that only go out for 6 months and come back in. They're little guys, 14 inches or so. Great. You know, wonderful. And I know there's people listening right now, so, well, I got a 12-pounder on my 5-weight. Well, I'm sure you did, but it's just not the responsible thing to do. The other thing is that you, with a 5-weight, you might not have enough rod to cast and turn over the appropriate size fly.
Uh-huh.
mm-hmm. The appropriate size sink tip, so it can certainly be a limiting factor.
Well, that's to kind of carry that on, Bob Barnes in Massapequa Park, New York. He says, what's the lightest rod and reel setup you go out with? So let's start there. Why don't you describe what you think would be the ideal weight and rod, and maybe you talk both about, you know, single-handed versus double-handed.
Okay. Well, you know, when you choose your tackle, first thing you have to think about is, where am I fishing? On the Deschutes River, the Grand Ronde River, or some of those, a lot of the tributaries of the Columbia. We go there in the fall of the year, and we fish floating line primarily, and steelhead, or earlier we talked about one salt and two salt fish. That's mainly all you're going to see. The bulk of the run is one salt fish, so they're 4 to 6 pounds, and floating lines and smaller flies, size 4s to 10s. You know, 6s and 7 weights are adequate, but I would never dream of using a 6 weight and a floating line and a size 6 fly up on the Skagit in the wintertime. So you have to really think about where you're fishing. So, with that
well,
in mind...
Well, before you go on there,
yeah.
Does that mean that most of the fish in a run for the year are going to be similar in size, or do you have to be prepared for the big one? In other words, you know, you can catch a small tarpon or a large tarpon, but there's
right.
always a chance it's going to be a large one, so you almost prepare for that.
Right, I would always prepare for the larger fish if they're frequent. I spent 9 years guiding on the Deschutes. I'm just using that for instance because I've spent so much time there, and 9 years guiding and a whole bunch of in additional years fishing it myself. And I saw probably one fish that was legitimately pushing 20 pounds and a handful of mid-teens. So they're very rare.
Okay.
So we just know that those rivers, some of those rivers are the average size of the fish is 6 or 7 pounds. Conversely,
okay.
You know, you go up to Skeena Country in British Columbia, you're going to gear up for the big fish because mid-teen to high-teen steelhead are a lot more common. You go to Northern California in the fall, and a lot of those fish, you know, a huge one is 7 pounds. And
okay.
Certainly there's bigger ones there. I know that, California guys, but they're smaller. So we kind of know going into it.
Okay.
To a degree what we're, you know, what the target fish is. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And that varies from river to river.
Right. Obviously,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so you can start out with a 6 or 7 at the bottom end and then move your way
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the beautiful thing is there is kind of a there's a system that a setup you can use for doing just about everything, and that is a two-handed rod. We'll talk about two-handed rods first. Something in the 13 to 13 and a half range length, and that's about an 8 weight. And, you know, guys, gals, that's the rod I've used for years and years and years now, whether I'm on a skinny little Columbia River tributary in the fall, or I'm up on the Dean River in July, or on the Skagit in April. 13 foot, 8 weight, and I can pretty much do everything I want with that. Then after that, if I want to get specialized, I'll drop down to a 6 or 7 weight, floating line, small fly, which I certainly use that quite a bit. But if I had to have one rod, it'd be 13 and a half, somewhere in there, 8 weight. You can throw sink tips with it, big flies. It's not too small that you know, you can't tackle an enormous steelhead with it. And it's not too big that it's not a joy to fish with a floating line and a size 6 fly for one salt steelhead.
Okay.
And then from there you can go up or down. Okay. I don't use a lot. I've got a lot of rods, and the 7 weight and the 8 weight are pretty much my
and that applies whether
arsenal, yeah.
Whether it's a single or a double-handed, right?
Yeah, sure, certainly. Okay. In fact, we'll talk about the single-handers. Yep, you know, to, before the two-handers got really popular, the single-handed rod to have through the 70s and 80s was a 9 or 9.5 foot 8 weight. And that's just,
okay.
You went out on the river and that's what everybody had. A few guys had a 9 weight. You know, some people are just kind of nervous about catching that big fish, and they want to be ready for it. Of course, you know, a small steelhead is a big fish, so it's all relative. But Some guys like the 9-weight. It's easier for them to cast the heavier sink tips that might be required. And then other guys, you know, light line people, they'll be out there with 7-weights on the Winter River. I'm talking single-handers, but a 9.5-foot 8-weight, probably the most popular single-handed rod.
Okay, and it sounds like you've mentioned floating line, sinking tip line.
Yep.
I guess it all depends, huh?
It all depends. And you know, one of the beautiful things about steelhead fly fishing and the animal itself is that it does lend itself, it being the water that they live in, and then their own disposition, if you will, or their moods and manners, it lends itself to a variety of methods. We can fish how we really want to fish. We can take a steelhead how on our own terms. So take that away for a minute, and I can tell you that when the water temperatures get into the high 40s and into the 50s, steelhead are very aggressive, and they'll come a long way for a fly. So why not use a floating line where it's just a joy to cast, a joy to fish, and then the added bonus of actually seeing a big boil as the steelhead takes your fly. You can cover, you don't have to worry about hanging up on the bottom. You don't have to worry about that, you know, the outside when you make your long cast and it's 5 feet deep out there and good water and you're fishing it, but it's also good water 2 feet in close to the shore. The floating line can cover it all. Without any issues. So that's just a really nice, fun, clean way to fish. Now, I wouldn't go up to the Skykomish River in February when the winter run steelhead are coming in and the water temps are in the low 40s and even the high 30s and the steelhead becomes a little more lethargic. You know, they're not going to move quite as far. So you want to go down, get a little closer to them. And that's when you start using the sink tips and larger flies. But I have friends that still go out there with a floating line because, once again, we want to catch them on our own terms. And occasionally you'll get some crazy steelhead that'll move a long way to the fly, even in cold water.
Jerry from Kenwood, California, sent in a question here online. He wants to know, because you had just talked about moving to a fly, are steelhead actively feeding as they move upstream to spawn, or are they hitting a fly as a territorial response?
Great.
Yeah, you just said they travel a long way to hit that surface fly, which doesn't sound territorial to me, but.
And of course, when we say, you know, surface fly, I'm referring to actually on the surface, but, you know, wet flies in a floating line. So they're just under the surface. But
Okay. Steelhead,
primarily, when they enter the fresh water, their digestive system is shut down, and they're there to spawn. That doesn't mean that some feeding and active feeding doesn't take place, but they don't need to do it. They have enough fat stores to carry them through their spawning. And one thing we haven't touched on yet is that there's basically two races of steelhead. There's winter run and there's summer run. They all spawn in the spring. You know, rainbow trout are spring spawners, hence steelhead are spring spawners. Difference between a summer run and a winter run, though, is the summer run comes into the river from the salt water in the late spring through the summer, and then winter's over and then spawns in the following spring, where a winter run comes in the winter months, December, January, February, March, and they spawn that immediate spring. So they're in and out a lot quicker.
Will that happen in the same river?
It can happen in the same river, you bet.
Again, another question came in. Rod Brashears in Amarillo, Texas, wants to know what the best time of the year, spring, summer, fall, or winter, to go for steelhead. So you've just identified two seasons, right?
Right, two seasons that can cover the whole year.
And, okay.
Living in the Northwest, it took me a little while to do it, but I've caught fresh, bright steelhead in every month of the year. There's definitely months that are better than others, and if I was just... And where does this gentleman live?
Texas.
In Texas.
He's going to come visit the Northwest.
I lived in Texas, and I was asking a guy like myself, when should I come out because I really want to catch a steelhead? I wouldn't ask you too many questions, and I would tell you to head to the Northwest in September or October, make your appropriate phone calls to find a guide, and some of those rivers on the Columbia River drainage all the way up to British Columbia, September, October. That's the, if there's such a thing, that's the easiest time to catch steelhead on the fly.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Well, let's continue on with this equipment. I do have to take a break here.
Okay.
But when we come back, we'll talk about leaders. There's quite a few questions on leaders here as
well. All right.
The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com, like wyomingtrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call the Platte River Fly Shop at 307-237-5997. Again, 307-237-5997. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Deck Hogan about steelhead on the fly. If you'd like to ask Deck a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use the Q&A text box. Send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Deck, there's a couple questions in here, one from Tad in Virginia, another one from Dino in Marysville, Washington, asking about the proper length and type of leader that you use. Can you describe that setup for us?
I sure can. It's pretty simple. First, one thing we really haven't touched on is just to establish that I swing flies for steelhead.
And, okay.
So those in the know who've been listening probably figured that out. It's all down and across, wet fly swing.
Okay.
I use floating lines, and I use sink tip lines. With a floating line, I build my leaders at home out of Maxima material, good stiff material. I taper it down to either 8 or 10-pound test, depending upon where I'm fishing, and they're 10 feet long. That's how they start out. And toward the end of the season, they might be 7 feet long, and I just add tippet. Pretty simple stuff. Steelhead aren't leader shy, at least the ones I'm looking for aren't, and you're presenting, you know, downstream to them, so they're always going to see that fly first. And even if they did see the leader, all the steelhead I've met, they wouldn't really care, because sometimes I think that they would hit that fly if it was tied to the end of your fly line. They're just so aggressive and locked on that fly. So that's pretty simple. Sink tips is even more simple. If you're fishing a sink tip, you want to keep your leader fairly short. Otherwise, the fly will, you know, I've seen guys on the river with 9-foot tapered leaders out of the package and a 10, 15-foot sink tip. Well, the sink tip goes down, and that 10-foot leader stays up. So I want to keep that leader right down there with the sink tip. So I never really make a leader over 4 feet long. Generally, my sink tip leaders are about 2.5, 3 feet, and I just tie a butt section, heavy butt section, maybe some 30-pound mono, short butt section, 8-10 inches long. I put a little perfection loop on there, and then I just use a perfection loop and put straight 10-pound Maxima for my leader. If your leader's under 4 feet, it doesn't need any taper to turn over. It's a nice little thing to know. So
okay.
You don't really need to waste your time tying a tapered leader. So there you go, 10 feet for floating line and about 3 feet for sinking tips.
Okay. A couple questions here, and I assume I kind of know what the answer might be, but they deal with strike indicators. We have Mike Chavez in Reno, Nevada, and another one from Steven in Brunswick, Ohio, wanting to know if you use them. But with your technique, I would assume not, right?
Yeah, never have and probably never will. I really like fishing the water. And when if I were to be fishing a strike indicator and a nymph, I'm fishing to a fish, if that makes sense. You know, I don't feel the water the same. The river doesn't bite back the same way, you know, meaning when you're swinging that fly and it's under tension and steelhead comes up and grabs it, boy, it's electrifying. That's just the way I prefer to search and fish for steelhead. So I can't really speak too much about indicators.
Okay, but I guess there are some people that do fish, you know, with nymphs or other methods.
Yeah, more and more these days.
Okay.
It's not always a good thing. And if you're just starting out in steelhead fishing, or even if you've been doing it for a while, my advice to you is friendly advice is just to go out and try swinging flies and move through the run and experience that. It's just a fun, clean way to fish, and it goes a lot beyond just hooking a steelhead when you do it that way.
Okay.
I guess that's all I've got to say about that.
Okay. No, that's fine. We've got a couple questions here. Richard Ruin, Derry, New Hampshire, and Jim Moser in West Virginia. They're both asking about two-handed rods here. And oddly enough, they both are talking about stripers. Well, they both live on the East Coast, so I think they're looking for something they could use for stripers and for steelhead. And probably an 8-weight is right in
yep.
there.
Yep, I just was going to say, I talked about it earlier. That'd be the one I'd go after, just with the little bit I know about striper fishing over there. And, boy, I think that'd be the do-all rod.
Yeah. Okay, good. Any other comments you want to make on equipment that reels, anything like that you think
reels,
is important?
You know, and certainly all of this is subjective as far as what brand we buy and what style we like. But as far as reels, you know, steelhead, they make long blistering runs and they do it right now, and they don't. If there's a glitch in the system, they're going to find it real quick. So I just say buy the best reel you can afford that appeals to you. Doesn't need to be, you know, an $800 super mega, you know, sealed everything and corrosion resistant, but it needs to be sound. Needs to be of sound construction. I've personally fished, you know, Hardy reels for a long time, just quick Paul reels, and they work great. I like the sound that comes out of them, a little music, if you will. And they don't fall apart. Certainly can never go wrong if you go ahead and ante up and get a good, you know, high-tech disc drag reel. Certainly not going to hurt because it's a sound reel.
Right.
But then the rest is, you know, up to you. And you want capacity, too. You need a reel large enough to, you know, even a small steelhead can take you way into your backing in a hurry if he wants to.
Right, so
you need
right.
capacity there. I like at least 150 yards of backing. And,
okay.
I've had to use it a couple times.
Sure.
As far as rods go, you know, we talked about 7s, 8s, and even 9-weights. 9-weights are a little big for steelhead. There was a time when they weren't, but the more we perfect the building of these rods and learning more about it, 8-weights are perfectly sufficient, even in the two-handed rods. And it's not all about casting, you know, 125 feet. It's about line control a fish fighting tool and a fishing tool. So the rest is up to you and what you like in the action of a rod. There's some really fast rods out there, and there's some really slow. I like something in between, kind of a medium action. These new rods from Echo are all medium action rods, and you can they bend. I like a rod that bends, but that's subjective.
Okay, well let's move on to flies because we have quite a few questions on flies.
Okay.
Dave, our favorite question asker tonight, again, he says, name three essential flies for fishing for steelhead that you'd want to have. And using, assuming your method of, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Three you're going to put in your box, not leave home without.
Yep. Flies are a lot of fun, and they can be as beautiful as you want them to be, and aesthetically please them as you want them to be, or they can be ugly, get the job done. And steelhead like them all. So I guess what I'm getting at is the sky's the limit with flies. And I know the question you're asking. You want some flies that you can have confidence in that deck gives the go-ahead to. And confidence is the key.
Yeah, deck, come on, give it up.
Confidence is the key. I'm fortunate to be confident in a lot of flies because I love flies and I believe in the steelhead and I experiment with them. Three flies. I'd have a muddler minnow. Muddler minnow, absolutely. And just a great all-around steelhead fly that a lot of people don't even think about because it's such
a neutral
looking thing. Yeah. Great.
I always think of something very pretty and, you know, flashy.
You don't always need that. You know, and that's for the, I kind of reserve that for that warmer water, late summer, fall fishing.
Okay.
Muddler minnow. And then just a nice spun marabou. Purple marabou, can't go wrong there, or orange. And other one would probably be, well, the muddler, I'm only limited to three. I would take like a kind of a standard tail body hackle wing, dubbed body, kind of that skunk style, but in probably purple with a little pink or hot orange butt. And this is hard for me to say because I'm limiting myself so much.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If I want to give a gentleman three flies, there you go.
Okay.
Muddler, standard kind of skunk pattern, and a marabou.
Now, am I reading into this? Tell me if I'm wrong here, but are you saying there's just a whole lot that they like or they're just not that picky?
They're not that picky.
They're
not that picky. I always joke on the river and say they'd hit your car keys. I see so many people getting so technical about this. And once again, you can do that if you want to. But I'd rather devote my energy into reading the water, swinging the fly just right so it feels good, and let the fish do the rest. The reason they're a great fly rod fish is because they're aggressive. They'll come to it. And they're reacting to the fly. This kind of gets back to a question that I don't think I finished answering earlier. They're not feeding necessarily. They're reacting to the fly.
Okay.
They're kind of, you know, if you roll a knitted ball past a sleeping cat, he's got genetic instinct to chase something or grab something that scurries by him. You don't run from a bear in bear country. The bear might not want to get you, but if you start running, his instincts
he responds, and
he'll chase you. And I think that is why steelhead take the fly. I don't know the real reason.
I think that's I think that's the same thing with Atlantic salmon. I mean,
similar
types of flies.
Exactly.
It's that ocean instinct. They've been out in the ocean. That something goes by you, you eat it. Right.
Latent feeding response.
Yeah.
Eat it or leave. Yep. And I firmly believe that. And I don't think that the critters that we're putting out there have to look specifically like an ocean critter, just kind of impressionistic. And if you look at a fly swinging across the current, there's nothing in the river like it. And it just emits all this power, just this tethered fly, fighting that current. You know, get up on a high bank and watch a fly swing, and you'll see what I mean. It's like a beast.
Okay. All right. A question from Joe in Pennsylvania. Do you like to fish tube flies? And if so, are there any particular patterns you like there?
You know, I have been around the tube fly thing as it really gained some popularity in steelhead, and I've experimented with them and the intruder style with the trailer hook. And wonderful flies. Again, I'm a guy who believes that they'll pretty much take anything as long as you believe in it. I haven't done a lot with tube flies. If I did, I would fish all the same patterns I'm talking about. And I also love Atlantic salmon patterns. I fish acroids and, you know, various D flies and spay flies and just tie them on a tube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I was told at one point is that one of the effective parts of the tube fly was that trailer hook, that steelhead tended to strike short, and that trailer hook is, you know, there to get the short strike. Do you feel the same way? Is there a lot of short strikes, or is that just kind of a old wives' tale?
You know, there certainly is some short strikes, and I can back what I'm about to say because on the Deschutes River, I watch the fly swing. I stay even with the fly as my client is fishing down, and I see the fly in the water. So I've seen over 1,000 steelhead move to the fly and take it. And when they take it, they take it. They'll come up and nip at it sometimes, and that little trailer hook might help you out. And it's a small hook, so you know that would certainly help in that case. But more often than not, it's angler error, and we set the hook too soon. And that little trailer hook could certainly help you in that regard.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
I think a lot of times we forget that these fish, whether it be a steelhead, a salmon, a trout, a catfish, are professional eaters.
Thank you.
This is what they do all day long, and we always think they're missing, but I don't think they really do miss that much.
No, they don't miss it. You know, they don't miss it. We pull it away from them. Now, in their defense, I will say that the little squid or the little fish that they eat out in the ocean isn't tethered to a string.
Yeah.
When they inhale it, it goes in.
Right. But there's no resistance.
So you'll sometimes we'll get a pull. So there is that, for sure. But usually if they really want it, you'll feel that. In fact, here's a little tip for you guys. If you're swinging along and you feel a pull, and you don't, and you're good, and you don't set the hook, just let it keep swinging. Because if he's serious about it, he'll come back and then pummel it on the same swing.
Okay.
And because, as you said, Roger, they're professional eaters, and they don't miss it. Yeah.
Now, there was a question here from Gert Michelson, Belgium. He said he understood that there was a lot of fishing done at night. Number one, is that true? Night fishing for steelhead, and he asked about fluorescent materials or you know, even things that glow in the dark kind of thing.
I've done a little experimenting with that, and I don't think there's a quote unquote lot of steelhead fishing done at night. In Oregon, it's illegal to fish a half an hour after sunset.
Ah.
So that rules that out.
Right.
But we all fish later than that till it's pitch dark and nobody bothers us, but technically half hour after sunset, half hour before. There's certain places where there's a hatchery close by and the hatchery fish return and they kind of pool up in a pool right below the hatchery where you're allowed to fish at all hours, and guys will experiment and go out there with glow-in-the-dark stuff, and sure, it'll work. I know Deke Meyer's book that came out in the early 90s called Advanced Fly Fishing for Steelhead. He talks a bit about it. And back when I was a young renegade, you know, I had to try it. And we went out and brought our camera flashes and tied marabous with glow-in-the-dark flashaboo and hit them with the camera flash and lit them up. And you know what? We caught some fish. But I realized, and that was a fun thing to do when I was young. But at that young age was... Steelhead for me is sensory, you know, sensory overload thing, and all I want to get engage all my senses. So when I couldn't see my steelhead jumping, but I could hear them,
fun,
it was cool. But I wanted to see it all. So
that's
a little bit I can say about that. And yes, they will hit fluorescent stuff at night.
Okay. Well, again, time for a break. When we return, we'll be answering more of your questions about finding and catching those elusive steelhead. Fair Marquette River Lodge, a full-service Orvis-endorsed lodge, fly shop, and guide service located on the banks of the historic Fair Marquette in Baldwin, Michigan. They provide year-round lodging for the business or pleasure travel, as well as a full-service fly shop and guided trips for steelhead, salmon, or large resident brown trout. For more information, visit www.pmlodge.com. That's pmlodge.com. Or call 231-745-3972. Again, that's 231-745-3972. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Deck Hogan about steelhead on the fly. If you'd like to ask Deck a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive it immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, let's see. I'm just going to double-check here what's come in on the Internet. Somebody wants to trade you a trip for a largemouth bass for a steelhead trip. We've got bartering going on here.
Good.
A couple, you know, people have asked about Great Lake fishing. Have you fished for steelhead in the Great Lakes, and is there any differences there particularly?
I had a little experience with Great Lake steelhead. I went out, though, it was probably 98, 99. I went back and did a little two-handed casting clinic tour. I was out there for about a month and did a little fishing on that one. And I'm trying to think here. Oh, no, I went out. That was in the springtime, so I didn't fish on that one. I went in the fall, and did one another year, I think the year before that. And I had the opportunity to fish the Salmon River in New York, and was pleasantly surprised at the quality of the fly water that I saw that I thought was good for swinging. And it was a lot of people, but I noticed all the people were kind of crowded up in the heads of the runs. And they were all nymphing with indicators and glow bugs, and that's kind of how they do it there. And I remember looking at the rest of the pool, the body and the tail out and the beautiful glide in between and the slot along the far bank, and I just was seeing all this beautiful steelhead water with 15 guys up in the head of the run. And I asked the kid standing next to me, I said, "What about all that beautiful water?" And he goes, "Oh, no, guy. Those steelhead are only in the tops of the runs." And I looked at him and I smiled and I said, "Well, how'd they get there?" And he kind of didn't really understand what I was saying. Then he started laughing. I said, "Well, I've got to swim up there and they might stop on the way." Long story short, I didn't catch any on the salmon. I just had a few hours to fish. I went over to the Genesee River and with a wonderful gentleman by the name of Jerry Custage of Winston Rod fame and now Sweetwater Rods. He brought me to the Genesee River in downtown Rochester, New York. And we hiked down this canyon, and we fished this little river. Same thing. There's a bunch of guys in the tops of the runs, and well, they were hooking some fish. But I wasn't really interested in fishing that way, so I grabbed my 200 rod and my pretty spay fly, and I went swinging my fly and working down the run. And I caught a big, beautiful, probably 18-pound chrome-bright big buck, hooked another one, and caught a coho salmon. And at that moment, when I was down there, swinging that fly, getting the grab, I might as well have been anywhere in the Pacific Northwest. It was a great experience.
So basically, the same techniques work both places. There's probably been traditionally certain techniques that have been adopted by the locals, but certainly, like you say, it sounds like you could apply the swing technique there as well.
Yeah, and the more I spoke with a lot of people, and I still do, who live over there, and they're starting to swing flies more and more. What they do, though, is they give up some numbers, and there's certainly more effective ways to catch steelhead than swinging the fly. But then, once again, we're talking about catching them on our terms. I don't
mind
going out and catching one steelhead, swinging my fly and watching a guy back trolling plugs on the Skycomish River hook five. You know, it's not what it's about for me, so I just say, great, there's fish in the river. Here's how I'm going to catch them. I think it's catching on in the Great Lakes, though.
Let's talk about expectations. Alan Seals and JT, Alan's in Denton, Texas. JT's in Arlington, Virginia. Alan says, "I spoke to several guys who have fished for steelhead in the Northwest. They all report fishing hard for 3 days or so and catching one or two fish. Is this
typical?" That good?
Is this typical? And then I've read other things where people say, you know, catching steelhead isn't that hard. So what's the truth here, and what would a person's expectation be going out on a first trip?
When I start my day guiding, and I'm with people who are new to it, I always tell them, okay, we're turkey hunting today. Or mule deer, whatever your game of choice is, where you only shoot one animal for the day or the year.
Okay.
I'd say put yourself in that mindset, and you've got to enjoy the process. And you truly have to go out on that steelhead river hoping and even expecting. That's fine. You better expect you're going to catch something. It doesn't always happen, but there's no joy in that if you don't. But you're looking for one animal for the day. That's the expectation. That's the mindset. So if you're only looking for one animal, the difference between catching that animal and not is literally one cast, right? So there's certainly a process that has to take place to get to that one cast, but that's the difference. You hook one, you know. So over time, as you get to know the water, know the river, and really all the subtleties, and you become more efficient at casting and wading and moving, you're going to do a little better. But there has to be fish in the river to catch them.
So that's what I was going to say. Is this because of lack of numbers of fish that it's harder? Is it because they're erratic in their take?
Right. It's a little of both.
Okay.
It's a little of both, but certainly you need numbers. And when the question was, you saw somebody said it was easy. When there's steelhead, lots of them in the river, it's almost embarrassing how easy the fishing is. You just flop it out there and hang on, and they'll come and grab it. So, it's certainly a little more in depth than that, but not a whole lot. And you get the right conditions. They can also be moody. They're fish.
Right.
And they're fish that aren't really eating, so it's not like they have to eat to survive. So conditions are right, barometric pressures are right, water temperatures are right, other atmospheric conditions, all that comes together and you've got fish around, it's easy.
Okay. Ted in Nashville, Tennessee wants to know, says, I've only had the opportunity to fish for steelhead a few times, and each time we casted blindly in search of fish. Is there ever a time when you can sight fish for steelhead?
Yes, there are, and I avoid those situations. And most
you avoid those. Why do you say that?
Well, if you can see them, it means the rivers I fish, it means the water is really low and clear, which is not always a great thing. They're in stagnant summer pools in the summertime. Remember we talked about the summer fish having to winter over? They'll get in deep pools, and they'll just pile up in there, and they'll just stay in there, and they're kind of lethargic. And whenever I've seen steelhead and cast to them, I rarely ever catch them. But the big thing for me, and the reason I said that so quickly, was that I love the blind fishing. Remember I said I love fishing the water.
Okay.
And reading the water and suspecting they're in there. Once I see them, the mystique is over.
Okay. Well, then that brings up Kim in Rexburg. If you're not familiar with the river you are fishing, what do you look for to identify the water that should hold the steelhead?
Great question. And all the great steelhead fly rivers, of which there are many, they all have one thing in common, and that's good fly water. And good fly water is 3 to 6 feet deep. Could be 2, could be 7, but 3 to 6 feet is about right. And you look for places where the water's that deep, where there's a slowing of the current, like on a slight bend in the river. All the current will be coming down bank to bank, hits that bend and shoots off toward the high bank on the outside of the bend. So inside, the inside bend will have a shallowing and a slowing of the water. Where the fast water meets the slow, there's something we'll call a seam. And that seam could be a narrow seam. It could be a very wide seam, wide being 40, 50 feet wide, depending upon the size of the river. That's got kind of a broken surface, 3 to 6 feet deep, slows to what we like to call a walking speed. If you could walk along the good water, the water I'm talking about, it'd be about the same pace as you're walking. So not too fast, not too slow, 3 to 6 feet deep. Any break in the current, boulders, they like to stay in behind boulders. They also like to stay in the little cushion that happens in front of boulders. Once again, 3 to 6 feet deep. Any slots, if you're on a river that's relatively clear, look for the darker green slots and depressions. It's quite a study in reading water.
But it sounds like what you're saying is they're holding in the same places that a normal rainbow would hold.
They do. Very similar. Riffles. So, yeah, sure, they want to get out of the main. Just picture yourself in a windstorm, whether you're a rainbow trout, you and me, or a steelhead. If you're in a humongous windstorm and you've got to get across the field, you might duck in behind the tractor to get out of the wind, break free of that tractor and run to get in behind the barn. You'll line yourself up with the tractor, even if you're 100 yards away, because it's going to be breaking that wind. It's the path of least resistance.
Sure.
The only
sure.
difference between trout and steelhead, where they hold, is that trout are adding that you need the cover, right? You need oxygen, but trout need food. Steelhead don't need food, so they're not looking. You're not going to catch steelhead along the foam lines where you might catch trout, but everything else is pretty much the same.
Yeah, just looking for a comfortable place to rest. And the difference, too, is a steelhead is going to make the move to the next resting spot.
Right.
And then, so they're constantly on the move.
Exactly. And they do like structure. They want to have, it doesn't need, you know, you can have just dinner plate sized boulders, but they want some kind of structure to feel secure around and break up the current. Could just be a cobble bottom, but if you have a cobble, a fine cobble bottom next to just a sandy bottom, they're gonna hold on that cobble bottom every time. They like rocks.
Do they, are they at all shy of being lined? I know you're fishing with the fly in front of them most of the time, but let's say you just went over, you know, lined some water. Are they sensitive to that at all?
I don't believe they are. And where they would be, and I have seen this, is earlier we spoke about the fish that you could see in a summer, you know, late summer low water pool with a lot of steelhead in it. You know, there they'll get a little spooky. But I think out in the, you know, in the bigger water or within the runs that you're blindly fishing for them and they're just scattered about, I don't think that really bothers them. And if it does, like, once again, you're already past them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're staying downstream. So if you lined a fish and it spooked him, he didn't want your fly in the first place because he saw your fly before he saw the line.
A couple questions here. One from Mark Brown in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Another one from Rick in San Francisco Bay. Area, and the two things that are similar in their questions are talking about murky water, whether it be, you know, from a glacial runoff or, you know, just disturbed water where you can't see in. And I'll read part of Rick's here. Often the water, he's fished for trout a lot. Now he's starting to seek out steelhead and having a hard time. Often the water is murky with limited visibility, and I can't see what's beneath the surface, not to mention the big guys are hiding deep down. What advice can you give someone like me who's trying to move up to bigger fish that are hiding in water that's often cloudy from winter rains and so forth? How does he make the transition?
Sure. Just as the we had discussed that steelhead were professional eaters, they're also pretty good at seeing in their world. And what might look really dirty and off color to us is not too bad for a steelhead. There's going to be a time where the water's just too, you know, we call it blown out. It's just too cloudy to see. I'm comfortable if I can step into my knees and just make out the top of my boots. So since I'm not Shaquille O'Neal, that's probably about 2 feet long, you know. So two to three feet of visibility, I'm comfortable. I've seen people turn away from the river when it's that color. That's a big mistake. If this gentleman's water is a lot dirtier than that, I don't have a lot of advice other than you know, keep fishing.
It's going to be a long day, huh?
It's a long day, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you want a little bit of visibility. And when that happens, when it is low visibility, I'll use larger flies. And that doesn't necessarily mean a larger hook, but, you know, 3 to 5 inch big flies. Some colored water demands a dark fly. Some demands a brightly colored fly. You can never go wrong with a big black and purple something when the water's off color. If the water's off color and it's high, oftentimes the fish, at least in the Northwest, they'll get out of that main flow. Remember, the path of least resistance, the higher the water gets, the more in toward shore that happens. So they'll sometimes be in very, very close. The river's huge and it's full of rain melt, snow melt, and the fish are in 2 feet of water up near the shore.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
a couple questions here. Rob in Wyoming, Frank in British Columbia, both are asking about fishing, how deep to fish when you're swinging. Evidently, there's a little controversy on getting to the bottom, or you don't have to be on the bottom. So why don't you straighten them out there, Dick?
Okay. I can tell you what I believe.
If it's possible.
What's been proven to me, that's up to what people believe, if what I say. But I got a little experience to back all this. Once again, we're swinging flies for steelhead. We're looking for active fish. And we consider that steelhead water, good steelhead water, is 3 to 6 feet deep. So most of it's about 4 feet deep. And if you take a 30-inch long steelhead, which is, you know, almost 3 feet long, and you consider his size, 4 feet of water, a steelhead that's going to bite your fly, that's an active fish, ready to bite, is not laying right on the bottom. He's what we call on the fin. If you were able to see him from above, you could see his fins out. He's using his fins to support himself in the current. So he's up off the bottom a little bit. I don't know, let's say 6, 8, 10, 12 inches. let's just say a foot, and his body is already 5 inches deep because he's a 30-incher, if you can put your fly, split the difference, put it 2 feet down, it doesn't take him much to say, ooh, I want that, and just tip up and grab it. So I never feel like I need to be right down there in their faces, and I'm very, very confident in that. That doesn't mean I want to be skimming the surface when, you know, the water's right in the mid-40s, but I do not need to be feeling the bottom. And I've heard a lot of people say, if you're not losing flies, you're not steelheading. Well, that's not true. It is true. If you're losing flies, you're not steelheading. You're breaking flies off and changing them. So just have confidence. And it's so easy for us to lose earlier we talked about you're looking for one animal in the day. Well, gosh, just because you're not feeling bottom isn't going to change a thing. You know, going deeper is not going to add fish to the river.
I think the other thing is to realize that you're really fishing for an ocean fish here, which is a real powerful animal that can move fast and through the current much better than a standard rainbow trout could. And not to demean a rainbow, but
no, I believe
you're talking about a powerful fish.
Yeah, and they're built to swim long distances and through heavy water and live out in the ocean and elude predators, sea lions, harbor seals, orcas, what have you.
And
get away quick. It doesn't take much of a kick of the tail to say, ooh, I want that, and come and grab it.
So I
never feel like I've got to be really deep. You know, if I know I'm fishing a 6-foot deep pool, and it's not so much the depth sometimes, it's the current speed. If it's a little heavier surface current, you know, I'll try and get down. But all I'm really trying to do is get down to feel that, you know, halfway point, that mid-depth I'm talking about, which sometimes is a little more difficult to get to if the water's a little quick on the surface.
But you know what,
my friends, just it's so easy to get caught up and I'm not fishing the right fly. I'm not deep enough. What am I doing wrong? It's a tough game.
Be persistent, right?
Be persistent and enjoy the process. Realize what you've gotten yourself into and enjoy it. And the fish will come.
Let's cut off with that because we're out of time here.
Wow,
and,
that went quick.
It does go quick. I do want to mention, because we did get a couple questions, a lot of people are concerned about the future of steelhead and their survival and all that kind of thing. Of course, we didn't have time tonight to get into that. That'd be a whole show in itself, I think.
Sure.
But just to steer people to some good sources, number one in the back of Deck's book, he does address some of those and gives you some organizations you can contact for information. And also the current issue number 12 of Wild on the Fly, has a whole long article on this and also lists about 10 different organizations where you can help and get more information on preserving the steelhead, which, of course, we're all concerned with. So I just wanted to pass that on to you folks that are interested in that. There's two resources for you right there that can help you out.
And we should all be interested in that.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, it's time to wrap things up. So when we return, we'll be going to do our drawing for our gifts tonight. And for both the 3-year membership for the Federation of Fly Fishers and the 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine and Dex Books. So stay tuned. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop has an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com, and that's K-I-E-N-E.com, or call 800-400-0359. That's 800-400-0359. Just a quick reminder to everybody before you leave the site tonight, if you could take a minute and give us your feedback about the show, you can find a link on our homepage. What did you think of tonight's show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd sure appreciate it. Well, it's time now to give away a few gifts here. And the first gift will be a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, which is always a great gift. And if you want to learn more about the Federation of Fly Fishers, you can go to their website at fedflyfishers.org, and you can find out all about the Federation there. So we'll pick our first winner. And that winner will be Bob Lewis in Pennsylvania. So Bob Lewis in Pennsylvania. Congratulations, Bob. And if you already have a membership, yeah, if you got a membership, we'll extend it for you. And now, Fly Fusion Magazine, and their website is flyfusionmag.com if you want to learn more about that magazine. And we've got a winner there of Robert Seidman in Pennsylvania. Boy, Pennsylvania's making out tonight.
The PA boys are making out.
Yeah, they're doing good. So you'll get that one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which is a great magazine, lots of great articles on how to do things rather than a destination piece. So I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Well, now, a question from tonight's show for Deck's book, and I'm going to remind you that to qualify for this, you'll have to type in the answer on the homepage of the website and put in your name and your location. If you don't do all those things, then you won't qualify. And I'm seeing there's just a ton of questions we didn't get to online tonight.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks. I appreciate all the questions. We did the best we can, but it's a very hard thing to do. Okay, what, let's see. There is a name for the steelhead that goes to sea, and it could be one of two names that Deck was calling them when they come back. They're either one or two what kinds of fish. One or two what kinds of fish. So put in your answer, and the first person, and Deck's going to tell us whether you've answered correctly or not, so I can get out of that responsibility. But and I hope I made my question clear. So what we've got going on here now, Deck, is I'm just refreshing and waiting for these to come in. First one is Joe in Linden, Michigan. He says smolt. Would that be correct?
Nope.
Sorry, Joe. Can try again. Thomas Marks in Derby, New York says salty. That's why I gave you the job, Deck.
Oh, I know. I want to be kind to this man and say he's got the first four letters correct.
Okay, Thomas Marks in Derby, New York. You just got a copy of Deck's book. And what we were looking for is what, Deck?
Salt. One salt fish, two salt fish. Yeah.
Yeah, one salt fish, two salt fish. So.
Hey, I wanna the first gentleman.
Yes.
If I'm not overstepping my bounds, he won a prize. We're going to send him a copy of my new fly tying DVD.
Okay, there you go.
That worked. All right.
Now, that was Joe Girarda, I'm destroying his name, but Linden, Michigan. Both you gentlemen, Thomas and Joe, send in the same way you answered here, give me your email address so that I know how to contact you. And then after the show, I'll contact you for your contact information so that we can get these prizes out to you. Well, thanks, Deck, for offering up your DVD.
Yeah,
that's,
you bet.
That's a great thing.
Well, and, certainly want to get my new DVD in the hands of many. And we did talk about one-year smolts and juveniles and two-year, but I think the operative word was when you said they come back to the river.
Right.
Either way, he's got a DVD, and I'm happy to have him have it.
Well, that's nice of you. Well, Deck, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Again, we ran short of time. We could probably go on for another hour or two.
There's a lot to talk about.
You know, after looking at your book myself, we're not going to cover this in an hour. But thank you so much for your time and your participation. We sure appreciate it.
You bet, my friends.
And hopefully we can talk again.
All right.
Our next broadcast will be on February 20th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we're going to interview Dick Cameron. And our topic for the show will be Permit on the Fly in Yucatan's Ascension Bay. Dick has experienced over 800 permit landed and countless hundreds more hooked or near hooked, either personally or through the accounts of his friends, clients, and guides. To understand permit, you need to be in the thick of them, and Dick certainly is. Listen to hear Dick's tips, tricks, and secrets to getting hooked up with a permit. So don't miss that show. We'd like to thank ISC, the International Sportsman's Exposition, Fly Fusion Magazine, Platte River Fly Shop, Keeney's Fly Shop, Pere Marquette River Lodge, and the Federation of Fly Fishers for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so that you won't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.